Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Jason Lipschitz, Billboard's Senior Director of Music.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you have an exciting weekend?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I actually had some Billboard colleagues over.
Really?
For
anyone I know?
Joseph Lynch and Lindsay Havens came.
Quality people.
They were doing a little road trip around the tri-state area and stopped by our home in New Jersey and had a lovely time.
Was there music played?
There was not. There was music discussed, but not played. Oh, yeah.
We'll have to. Why can't we record that next time? It's like special guests. It's just Joe and Lindsay.
The must-hear music crew. Yeah.
Hey, there you go. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Okay, today on the show, we've got chart news about Juice WRLD's huge debut at number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart, with his posthumous release, Legends Never Die, and how it's the biggest week for any album in 2020. Plus, we talk about his takeover on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, where he has 17 of the top 100 songs of the week.
Pretty incredible, Keith. Plus, we've got my interview with Ellie Goulding. I recently caught up with the pop singer-songwriter to talk about her new album, Brightest Blue, working with Juice WRLD, speaking of Juice WRLD, and we even geek out over our shared love of Bjork, you know, as I am wont to do. So stick
as
around.
One does.
Yeah. So stick around for that in just a few minutes. But first, before we get started, Keith, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you never, ever, 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 ever miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts. That is plural.
We need to start a new podcast. It's called the Plural Podcast.
Yeah.
Just to confuse people. Just to keep them on their toes.
Someday.
Okay, so first up, Juice WRLD's Legends Never Die comes storming in at number one on the Billboard 200 with the biggest week of the year for any album, as the set debuts with 497,000 equivalent album units earned in the U.S. in the week ending July 16th. According to Nielsen Music MRC data, the posthumously released album beats 2020's previous high for a album logged by the arrival of The Weeknd's After Hours, when it bowed at number one with 444,000 units on the chart dated April 4th. Now, the last album to notch a larger week than Legends was actually Taylor Swift's Lover, when it entered at number one on the September 7th, 2019 chart, with, just 867,000 units. You know, just a few. In addition, Legends Never Die's first week was led by the blockbuster streaming debut of the album, as the album's tracks logged 422.63 million on-demand streams in the U.S. That's the largest streaming week of 2020 for any album and the fourth biggest streaming week ever for any album release. Over on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, it's Juice WRLD's world as he holds 17 of the top 100 songs on the tally, with an amazing 5 in the top 10. He debuts at number 2 with Come and Go, a co-build track with Marshmello. DaBaby's Rockstar with Roddy Ricch, by the way, holds at number 1. Juice WRLD also bows at number 5 with Wishing Well. Number 7 with Conversations. Jumps 74 to 9 with Life's a Mess with Halsey, and debuts at number 10 with Hate the Other Side with Marshmello featuring Polo G and The Kid LAROI. Now, Jason, did you know that Juice WRLD is now just the third artist following The Beatles and Drake to have 5 concurrent songs in the top 10 at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Pop Smoke and Juice WRLD a lot last week, but it's pretty unbelievable what this album has done. And yeah, especially you just look at that 5 songs in the top 10, it's mind-blowing the type of response this album has received.
Also says something about the power of streaming these days, too. Yeah. By the way, the record for the most concurrent top 10 songs is held by Drake, who had 7 songs in the top 10 at the same time on the July 14th, 2018 dated chart in the wake of the release of his Scorpion album. I cannot wait to see what he does in a couple weeks, I assume, month. I don't know. It'll drop out of the sky when Drake's new album comes out.
Yeah, he just put out a couple songs with DJ Khaled last week.
See That's right. They debut. Yeah, we'll find out about that next week on the Pop Shop.
A good teaser for next week's Pop Shop. But right now, not next week's Pop Shop, but this week's Pop Shop includes my interview with the one and only Ellie Goulding. I spoke to Ellie recently about her just released album, Brightest Blue, which came out on July 17th. It marks her first album in 5 years, unbelievably, since Delirium in 2015. I talked to her about working with the acclaimed indie artist Serpent with Feet, and that leads into a lively conversation about both her wedding and our shared love of Bjork, one of my favorite artists of all time. Plus, we talk about Ellie's collaboration with Juice WRLD on the 2019 track Hate Me, which is included on the album. It was really fun catching up with Ellie. Take a listen to my chat with her. Beautiful lies on a Friday night, starting to wonder
where we lost the magic. Heading across... Ellie, I can see and hear you now.
Yay, lucky you.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm pretty good. I got up this morning, did it like a jog for like 4 miles, which was nice. Got it out of my system, and now I'm drinking mimosas. So I'm having a good day. Yeah.
That sounds like a wonderful day.
Yeah, it's my kind of day. You know, balance.
Balance. Exercise and mimosas. Love it. first of all, it's been a minute since we caught up. It's good to see you again. It's good to hear you again. See and hear you at the same time. And you have a new album coming out. Congrats on it. It's really, really great. It's a really special body of work. So congrats on it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Gosh. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. So it's fairly surreal that it's finally here. But it feels right. It feels instinctively like there couldn't be any other time, not earlier and not later. So as much as the world is in a very changing place right now, more than ever, it still feels right.
Absolutely. When did you start conceptualizing this project? I mean, it's been 5 years since the last album. How far back do the roots go?
I guess when I finished touring with Delirium, so I guess that was 2015, then a few more years of touring around that, and a couple of other songs meant that sort of kept me occupied for a long time on the road. And then I came home and had for the very first time days off and weeks off, and it was so alien to me to have that time that I had to kind of start reflecting on everything and unraveling, you know, my life for the past however many years, whether I wanted to or not. I knew it was time to confront everything I'd been through. And then I was like, wow, I'm like a woman now. I'm like I'm in my 30s and I'm seeing things in a different way. I'm trying to figure out why I see things now compared to then. And so, yeah, I've had a lot of unraveling and a lot of analyzing in a good way, trying to understand how I've become this person and where my rationality comes from, where my artistry comes from now, where my lyrics, my music, and I'm having to just like, yeah, I've navigated the past few years, and this album, when I listen to it, makes me realize that it's the first album where it's not like my defining my life album. It's the album that I had to write to kind of process everything that had happened and to acknowledge who I was now. And that, you know, that meant going out of my comfort zone, and I explored a lot. I explored different chord progressions, different, you know, sonic sounds and different, lots of different things. But I also used the same songwriters and producers that I worked with back in the day. So I still believe in like simplicity and not having a crazy amount of people around. And I have this like innate, you know, like trust of them because they've known me since the very beginning. So they've kind of been through all of that stuff. And so that's how, yeah, this album came about.
it's great. Obviously it's natural to have that sort of growing up process reflected on this album. It certainly is just as a listener. I'm curious because also you've been through a lot personally over the last 5 years. You got married last year. How much did you draw upon those experiences in when writing these songs?
To be honest, not much because I've always felt like it's weird. Even though my songs center so much around my relationships and around my personal life, I still feel like I've managed to separate the two, which is strange because it's almost like I do develop this kind of this side of me that writes very, very, you know, in a very kind of personal and intimate way. But at the same time, for example, like something like my marriage is to me is like an untouchable thing. It's like when you marry someone, you know, it's for life and it's not something you play with. And it's not like in my 20s when I had relationships and I wrote songs about them, it felt like I was still in a very naive place and I was still really trying to understand who I was. And so respectfully, I felt like in the past that things were easily kind of, I want to say like played with, but like easily like taken and used as like songwriting fodder or whatever. But something like marriage is just like, I feel like it's something I, well, certainly not right now, I want to touch on because it seems like a sacred thing. And it isn't providing me with writing right now because it's not something that I feel like I want to like, I don't know. I like went to say like trivialize in the sense that I still write pop records in a sense, but this album is definitely more, it's definitely more personal, but it's all about myself. It's like, it's not about anyone else. It's about finding love for myself and taking a long time to get there and, you know, and talking about the journey it took for me to reach that point, I think. But also I did write the record like way before I met him. So it has nothing of him on it really.
Maybe the next one. It's totally fine.
Maybe, but I don't know. We'll see. Lies, baby, tell me how you hate me. Tell me how you hate me. Tell me how I'm trash and you can easily replace me. Tell me that I'm strung out, wasted on
So I also want you mentioned Hate Me. With Juice WRLD and that will also appear on this album. I was just curious as to what your memories of working on that song were. Obviously, it's been roughly 6 months since Juice WRLD tragic passing, and I'm just curious. I was glad to see it make the track list. I'm curious what your memories were of making that song, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do I say? It was one of those things where I heard the song and I recorded my vocal on it and everyone was like, just to put a more positive spin on it initially, everyone was like, you know, oh, you sound dope on this. And I was like, oh, cool, dope. You know, I was like, oh, great, I sound good on this. And then everyone was like, oh, you should have it as a single. And you know what? You know who would be perfect for this? And everyone was like, Juice WRLD. And I was like, oh, he will not be on a track with me. There's no way that he'll do this. I know there's like a running theme with me, but I'd heard him when I heard like Lucid Dreams the first time, I was like, who is this? And I don't have that moment very often with artists. And I wanted to immediately know everything about him. So I called up the Max Martin camp because I knew that they'd been working with him. And I was like, I got to know about him. Like, what's he like? Like, what's his, you know? And they're like, oh, you know, he's super sweet. He's like kind of shy, like blah, blah. And then I was like, oh, maybe he'll do a record with me. And so somehow he said yes and loved the record. And I think maybe he just like, it was one of those things for him where he just had something to say and that song was perfect for it. And the one I met him on the video, he brought his family with him, his mom and his brother, and he had like the whole team there, and they were really gracious and really sweet to us. And we were just this like bumbling English team of like idiots, just kind of like, hi, you know, trying to be cool. And they were just so lovely, and he was great. And I wish I'd gotten to spend more time with him. I really do. I wish we'd gotten to live that song together. And I still think it's a really great song, and I'm so happy that we got to do something together. I'm just sad for him, you know, because he was on the beginning of something, an incredibly special journey, I think. And everyone was really excited for him. We were really excited for him. And then, yeah, it's just painfully sad. He had so much further to go. And I just feel very sad for him and his family, and that we never got to, like, you know, just live that. I mean, same with his other songs. Like, he was exceptionally talented. So I just... yeah, it was incredibly sad.
Yeah, it's even months later, it's still so sad. But, you know, like I said, I'm glad that this song was a hit and it gets to live on in on the.
I still think about it, and I think that you can never stop thinking about someone that you have a song with, like you have a piece of music with. It's just, you're connected forever. And yeah, I mean, I hope it lives on, and I hope his music is always appreciated, because yeah, he had a lot to give.
Yeah. And you know, you worked with on the track Start, you worked with Serpent with Pete, who's one of my favorites. I was just curious how you two connected.
Well, I watched him sing with Bjork in New York, and I've seen her perform quite a few times. And obviously she's my favorite. And I saw him and he just like made me cry. Like his voice makes me cry, and that cathartic thing doesn't happen very often to me. His voice just took me into a whole other realm. And I messaged him thinking, like, I was like, how do I start this conversation? I was like really nervous, because to me, he was just like a otherworldly being, you know, that couldn't talk to like a mere mortal like me. And I said, I just love you. I think I just said, like, I just love you. You know, please can we work together? And I don't usually do that. I'm too shy. I'm too like shy to ask people that. But to my astonishment, he replied and said that he loved my voice and that he was up for it. And then I also said, and also, is there any way that you can sing at my wedding? And again, to my surprise, he said, well, it just so happens that I'm in London then, so I could come up to Yorkshire. And he sang, and I was so together for my whole wedding day. I was so stoic, and I was like, I can do this. It's easy. Yeah, I do this. I just do this for shows. Anyway, I'm like, oh, come on. And you know, so I wasn't nervous until I got to the church, and then that was a nerve-wracking bit. And then when I got back to the venue, which is like, it was called Castle Howard, he sang, and I just like completely lost all control. I lost all control, and I was just sobbing. It was like the moment. It was the moment. I was like, this is, it was the one thing that made it real, because I realized that my greatest passion, which is like hearing a voice that will change me and like that I'll never forget, it, you know, at my wedding, it just like, it made it all just, I don't know. Yeah.
That's incredible. I had no idea. What did he sing?
He sang a few songs. I asked if he could sing the song with Björk, Blessing Me. I think that was the one that made me break down, because he just has his, I don't know whether she sang it originally and then he added to it or vice versa, but oh my God, it was incredible. He's even better live than anything on record that you've heard. It's like, it's pretty special. It's pretty like astonishingly special. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've seen him live, and yeah, he's incredible. So yeah, that's, That's fascinating. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, Bjork is my favorite artist. Do you have a favorite Bjork album?
You know what? I have to, by default, say The Greatest Hits, because I don't know how or why, but I think maybe I was bought it as a Christmas present from HMV or somewhere one year. I don't know if you guys have HMV in America. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was the days of HMV. And I think that I came home one day when I was 15 and I saw her performing at the Albert Hall on TV. I was like a bit drunk. I was like 15 and I took like a bottle of a Smirnoff vodka to, like, I think we were camping in a field somewhere. So I grew up in the middle of nowhere in the countryside. And I came back and I was like, who is this? I'd only ever heard It's All So Quiet on the radio. And that's all I'd heard. And like, I never really thought that much of it, other than it was just this like this unusual singer that's got this radio song. And then when I heard her what she actually did, it was mind blowing. It was a real pivotal moment. It was like the moment I was like, oh, well, my voice is kind of weird. Like, maybe I can be a singer. And it really, you know, it really was that, like, it sounds like I'm making it up, but it really was that moment. I was like, maybe my voice isn't so weird after all. Because I just never really had thought to listen to, like, I was never really brought up on, like, alternative female singers. So I didn't know who Joni Mitchell was. I didn't know who Kate Bush was. I didn't know who, you know, like, I mean, even Stevie Nicks. I didn't listen to Fleetwood Mac when I was a kid. I was brought up on, like, techno and electronic music. So these singers that, you know, like Imogen Heap, like, had these like voices, it suddenly made me feel like I had some kind of validation, and that even though people said to me like, oh, I think you should stick to playing guitar, you know, something, Bjork was one of the artists that made me feel like I had a place and that I could still be a singer.
Wow, I had no idea. That's an incredible story. I did not know that. Ellie, thank you again, as always. The next time you and I chat, it will be about Bjork for multiple hours. It'll be great.
Yes, I'd love that.
Thank you again to Ellie, and can't wait to get together soon with her, hopefully in person, to just like talk about Bjork and listen to our favorite Bjork songs.
Have a mimosa. You know,
yeah.
Enjoy
yeah.
a cocktail or two. I think Ellie was drinking a mimosa at the beginning of this interview, and I kind of wanted to see, like, how long can we keep her on the line? See how many more drinks she can have. Let's see what kind of loose lips she
can have. I was very jealous. I love a good mimosa.
I was like, how late in the day was it for her? Was she in London when you did
this? Yeah, so she was 5 hours ahead of me. I think it was probably around 5 o'clock her time. It was 5 o'clock somewhere.
See, all right. It wasn't like she was having like a breakfast, you know, bottle of booze or something.
Exactly.
But, you know, nothing wrong with that. All right. Now it's time for the chart stat of the week. And I'm here to remind you. 25 years ago this week, God, 25, Alanis Morissette got her first number one song on a Billboard chart. As You Oughta Know topped the Alternative Songs Airplay chart. The track climbed 2-1 on the chart dated July 22nd, 1995, and spent 5 straight weeks atop the list. It was her first of 3 number ones on the list from her breakthrough album Jagged Little Pill, which itself would spend 12 weeks at number one on the Billboard 200 chart. Jagged Little Pill would go on to win the Grammy Award for Album of the Year, as well as Best Rock Album, while You Oughta Know garnered a pair of Grammy Awards, including Best Rock Song. Jagged would also finish 1996 as the year-end number one album on the Billboard 200 chart. Since Jagged, Morissette has released 5 further studio albums, and she's about to drop her new effort, Such Pretty Forks in the Road, on July 31st. It marks her first studio album since 2012's Havoc and Bright Lights. So there you have it. This week in 1995, Alanis Morissette got her first number one single on a Billboard chart with You Oughta Know. It's not there to deny. Hey, you know what label Jagged Little Pill was released on?
I don't. I actually don't.
It was released on Maverick Records.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Madonna's former record label.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But also, do you know what famous rock artists play on You Oughta Know alongside Alanis Morissette?
I don't know that either. You're stumping me here.
Flea and Dave Navarro. Flea played bass and Navarro played guitar. So yeah, it was just a star-studded affair, that You Oughta Know track. And there you go. Okay, well, now we've reached the end of our show. Sorry.
Oh, good.
Any parting words, Jason? You want to go out on a favorite Bjork track?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do Hyper Ballad. Love some Hyper Ballad.
We'll go out on that, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye. I go through